The following program is brought to you by Podcast One Sportsnet. Don't forget to download our new Podcast One app.
He is currently the head football coach of the University of Michigan Wolverines and a former player. His dad and brother are also former players and coaches, but there is more to them than just football. It's time to talk about attacking life each day with an enthusiasm unknown to mankind. This is Attack Each Day, the Harbaugh's Podcast with Jim Harbaugh.
Another episode of Attack Each Day, the Harbaugh's Podcast, and we're down a member of the team. We've got Coach Jim down in Piura, Peru, as he has done so many times over the past decade. He is down in the city of Piura at Sacramo Santissimo, down with Father Joe, and he's developed a lot of relationships down there over the course of the past decade. And there's a great documentary on Comcast Sportsnet that they did in the Bay Area with a longtime friend of his, Dave Feldman. And so it's Coach Jack and I holding down the fort here for Attack Each Day, the Harbaugh's Podcast. And Jack, you know a little bit more about the trip down there and some of the grandkids going down. Maybe you want to elaborate a little bit on the trip to Piura.
It's been something Jim's been doing for 8-9 years now. I think he's only missed 1 year over the last 10 years. John Dennison, a very, very good friend of Jim's in the Bay Area, got him involved in that, and it's been something that he's looked forward to every year. He's going to be down there this week. Took Addie with him, his 9-year-old daughter, and she joins the other family members that have been there. Jay has been there. Jimmy's been there. Gracie's been there. They visited schools, visited a prison down there. They built homes for the Peruvians. They've carried 50-pound sacks of rice out of the fields. It's all documented on the Peru Ball documentary that you mentioned. So if the fans out there would like to see what Jim Harbaugh is doing as we speak, catch on to that documentary.
Maybe you can break down Peru Ball as you have seen it. It's a different form of football, you might say?
A much different form. It's a combination of rugby, soccer, football, and chaos. I think, and not necessarily in that order, but if you watch the game, it's just whoever has the ball knocks the other guy down and try to score. And they don't run over a goal line. They run into a wall, which makes it even more interesting. So it's a very interesting game.
Yeah, I would say you can watch some of it on the documentary that is on Comcast Sportsnet. It's a 5-part documentary and showcasing a lot of the different parts of the trip down there, the philanthropy part of it, the religious angle, really captures the faith, family, and football. And it's a heck of a trip, too, to get there from Ann Arbor. You've got to fly through a city like Atlanta to then go down to the capital of Peru, which is Lima, to then travel about 600 miles to Piura. So it's a daunting travel itinerary, but rewarding, certainly. And we'll look forward to hearing from Coach when he gets back with us for next week. And we're going to have Scott and Norv Turner on the podcast. I'll be interviewing them from Charlotte. So I'll be spearheading that. We'll have a lot to talk about next week.
I just want to mention, we touched on this a little bit last week, but Jackie and I are so very proud of all of our children, Jim, John, and Joni. And this last week, I really signifies and typifies beyond football, reaching out and giving beyond football. A week ago, 2 weeks ago now, Jim and I visited New York City, where we had a chance to meet up with our U of M alums in the New York area, and we just had a fantastic visit out there. And then the next night, it was Jim drove down to Toledo and with the legal the system and legal justice, 900 lawyers gathered for a dinner, and he was the keynote speaker and gave a tremendous address on social justice. The next night or so, he was in Tampa, Florida, with Dickie Vitale in the Dickie V cancer raising gala that they had down there, raised over, I think, $3 million at that event, and some of the greats from all around the country supported that. Much of that money that they raised comes back here to Ann Arbor with the Chad Carr Foundation and what they're doing at the Mott Children Hospital. Then over last weekend, he and Sarah were a part of the Chad Carr fundraising event in Glick, where they raised over $1 million, I think $1.25 million at that event, and now taking the week to go to Peru. And as I say, there's so many outstanding things and so many things that Jackie and I are proud of our children. But I think this week typifies the good people that they are and the good that they do around the country and the world.
No doubt about it. And he's going to sprint right from all of that off the field stuff right into the satellite camps and sandwiching in 10 camps, some of which will be in Ann Arbor, but others will be Florida, Virginia, Tennessee, who knows where else. But a lot of football related obligations certainly that that'll await Coach in June, and we'll look forward to hearing his outlook on that. Speaking of football, you know, we've talked a lot about Cleveland, and obviously you've coached for such a long time, but we never really have gotten into your fanship of the Browns. And I know last year, 0-16, not necessarily a lot to talk about, but perhaps you'd like to remind the listeners of the brighter days that existed in the Cleveland Browns' past.
One thing we Cleveland Brown fans and Detroit Lions fans share is success lately hasn't been forthcoming as we would like, but we shared a golden era of the 50s. When I was growing up, junior high school and high school at little town of Crestline, Ohio, I mean, every year it came down to a championship game. Didn't have the Super Bowl in those days. It was a world football championship game. Detroit Lions on one side of the field and the Cleveland Browns on the other side of the field. Bobby Lane, quarterback for the Detroit Lions. Otto Graham was our quarterback. Both great athletes and great athletes other than just football. They were just outstanding athletes. And Paul Brown walked the sideline, maybe one of the greatest coaches in all of football. He was our coach. And sometimes it was a blowout for Cleveland. Sometimes it was a blowout for the Detroit Lions. Most of the time it was a tight ball game, but we knew we were going to get a world championship out of that game.
And you knew you were going to get a world championship because how many teams existed at that point?
I think 8.
Okay, so yeah, you had decent odds there, right? I mean, 1 in 8 chance of walking away a champion. And four, you know, favorite players of yours, and then maybe favorite players of others, like, you know, Jackie or other friends and family.
Well, we got Jim Brown was a great running back for the Cleveland Browns. Marion Motley was involved in there. Gunnar Gatske was our center. Lou Groza, one of the great place kickers of all time, played offensive tackle and place kick for the Cleveland Browns. And some outstanding players. And Joe Schmidt, great linebacker for the Detroit Lions. And Doran Dibble, some great, great names that played for the Lions. So some great memories are brought up with that team. Of course, Alex Karras is a favorite of mine because he went to the University of Iowa, and then he became a movie star, very, very successful movie star in Hollywood. What's the one where he punched a horse?
I do not know.
You don't know that movie? What was that movie? I can't remember it now, but he knocked a horse out. Alex Karras of the Detroit Lions. Maybe some of our listeners can refresh our memories on that.
Blazing Saddles, Alex Karras.
Blazing Saddle. You got it. That's it. Do you don't remember that movie?
I'm familiar with it. No, I am. Mel Brooks.
That was one of the great, great movies of all time, but Alex Karras knocked out a horse and a University of Iowa Hawkeye, if I might add. I think I have already mentioned that.
And then the Cleveland Cavaliers with LeBron James and everything. I mean, bringing a championship to Cleveland, you're fairly neutral on the Cavaliers?
There was a coach, the original coach, when they started the franchise with the Cavaliers. The owner was a Bowling Green State University graduate, and his coach was a guy named Bill Fitch. And I think Bill Fitch coached Bowling Green, and then he brought him there as a head coach, and they didn't have very many good players, and Bill struggled the first year. They may only won 8, 9, 10 games, and they called him the Cadaverous rather than the Cavaliers during those days because they were so bad. But they've come a long way, and now with LeBron, it's a storied franchise, and I like to think that Bowling Green has their fingerprints on that great franchise.
Not the Cleveland Cadavers anymore. That's nice that they've come to life, so to speak, if you'd pardon the pun. So with Coach Jim out of town, your grandparenting details probably picked up a little bit. You're being leaned on a little bit more. How has it been so far?
Been a great weekend. We had a great weekend. Addie, before she left to go to Peru, field hockey team, she scored a goal, and the team won, or I believe they won or tied. Jack had three goals. This is the first time that he's been a multi-goal scorer, and he was very, very pleased that he was able to do that. So the team, you notice that when you're a grandparent, it isn't so much the team, it's your grandchild that you give most of the attention.
Would you like to detail maybe what happened when you and Jack Jr. were playing ball down in the den? The ball was kicked.
One of the great stories, one of the stories we'll remember, he and I have set up a little soccer court down in the basement, and we have some pictures hanging up on the wall. And so he wasn't getting the ball off of the ground, but for one reason, he hit the ball into the wall, broke a picture. A picture came down, glass shatters everywhere. The frame is broken, and it's on the floor. And he had hit, and he was about ready to cry. I said, no. I'm sure Jackie didn't hear. And what we'll do is get this glass picked up, and we'll throw it away and get the vacuum. You go get the vacuum. So he got the vacuum, and we swept up all the glass, and the game is on. We did take some of the pictures down now, but the game is on. So he comes up, and he's watching SpongeBob here in our living room, and he's on the floor on his stomach, and he's holding his chin up with his fist and his head up, and he's watching TV. So Jackie's out in the kitchen. I say, Jackie, come here. We've got a confession that we want to make. And so he's looking at the TV, and I'm looking at Jackie, and he can't see me. And I pointed to Jack. With Jack, I said, Jackie, I have a confession to make. I kicked the ball against the wall, broke a picture, glass shattered. But we got it picked up. Friend, he's still looking at the TV, doesn't look around. And I said, and you'd be so proud of Jack. After I kicked the ball and broke the picture, Jack wanted to help, and careful not to, he went and got the sweeper, and we got it all picked up. And I'm so proud of the way he helped me out with that. And so Jackie turns around to go to the kitchen, and when he looks up, he sees it turned back. He looked over his shoulder to me and gave me a thumbs up. He goes, thanks, Papa. So I gave him cover. It was one of those moments, those scrapbook moments that you remember. And I couldn't wait to share that story with Jim and Sarah. And the guy that would appreciate it as much as anybody is Riley Crane. Because Riley and I, we lived some of those moments back when we were living in Mequon, Wisconsin. And Riley and I would get in the backyard, we'd go down in the basement and play basketball. So we had those same moments with him, and we're now reliving them with Jack and the kids here in Ann Arbor.
Well, it's awesome. I'm sure that there will be some moments like that for Norv Turner and his grandson Harry and his granddaughter Rose. We're going to get to talking with Scott and Norv Turner coming up here on Attack Each Day, the Harbaugh's podcast. Welcome both you guys, and I guess I just want to start with talking a little bit about what it's like coaching together, because I know Coach Jack loved coaching with his son John, and then with Jim when he was at Western Kentucky. So I guess Norv, start with you. What's it like having your son on staff and being able to coach alongside him every day?
Well, it's awesome. First of all, we didn't get the opportunity to do this till about 4 years ago, and Scott went off on his own and came up the hard way in terms of being a graduate assistant and coaching a couple of years in high school, and then was in college at University of Pittsburgh and then at Carolina. So he had a great background when we had a chance to get together, and it's been a lot of fun. I depend on him a lot, and he's probably got the best understanding of what we do offensively of anyone I've been with. So it's fun to be with him, but he makes my job a lot easier.
Scott, and you coaching with your dad?
It's a lot of fun. I mean, I learn something new from him every day, just to be around, just the experience and everything. And then also just to, work that closely and, be there with your dad every day. It's definitely a pleasure.
And Norv, you've coached some outstanding quarterbacks, and now with Scott as your quarterbacks coach, I mean,
what do you pass on to him? What information's insights do you share, you know, having been with Troy and Phillip Rivers and a lot of really outstanding quarterbacks?
Well, I think each guy's different, and you got to understand that. And, you know, Scott's been with a variety of quarterbacks now, you know, since he got going. And I think when you're the quarterback coach, you get a personal relationship. You get a real close relationship with the quarterbacks. And there's a lot of times I'll ask Scott, what do you think Cam likes here? What do you think we should do here? And he can relate it, and they have a great line of communication already. You know, so I think you just got to figure out what a guy does best and you know, help him do that. And that's what Scott's doing with Cam.
Yeah, I mean, you know, coaching in the NFL, coaching, being able to coach a variety of different guys, I think you have to try to really focus and understand on what guys' strengths and weaknesses are and, you know, really hone on their strengths, you know, and protect them from their weaknesses and, you know, obviously work on them, but also try to kind of stay away from those types of things. And then you find out, you know, kind of what makes guys tick, how can you, you know, motivate them the most, or, you know, what you're going to do to, you know, to get the most out of them and, you know, have them be the best versions of themselves.
Scott, how rewarding was the time for you at Michigan? And then, Norv, I guess after that, you can chime in about what you saw because I knew you were around the program. But, Scott, your time with our guys, our quarterbacks, and our offense this past season at Michigan, what were your takeaways from that?
Well, it was an unbelievable experience. I mean, to be a part of a program like Michigan was great. You know, being the, you know, hands-on, being the quarterback coach, you know, with the Vikings for 3 years prior and then going into more of a, you know, you know, the advisor type role that I was, you know, at Michigan, where you're kind of, you know, a little bit in the background, you know, it was good. It was good for me to take a step back. I learned a brand new offense, being around a guy like Coach Harbaugh, just with, you know, how successful he's been and just the way he runs a program, being able to see that and, you know, be right in the middle of that was, you know, really valuable for me going forward. But, you know, overall, it was just a great experience to be a part of such a great program with such great history.
Norv, what did you see from our young guys like Brandon Peters and Dylan McCaffrey last year?
Well, I loved the opportunity. You know, I didn't coach last year, and the opportunity to get in and watch Michigan and watch Coach Harbaugh and watch the way they did things. I think you pick up things, you know, every opportunity you're exposed to a different group. And I got to be there in spring practice. I got to be there in fall practice, and then was at a couple of games and in the locker room at halftime, I snuck in there one time. So the young quarterbacks I really like, and I think they have a great future. And you know, Jim does such a great job offensively and then with the quarterbacks and putting everything together. You know, I just see a great future for those young guys.
What do you remember about Coach Harbaugh as a player, as a quarterback? You know, I know you've seen a lot of different quarterbacking types. What do you remember about his time in the NFL?
Well, he's such a great competitor, you know, and wherever he played, you knew that. And there's a reason he was Captain Comeback. You know, he was never out of it. And he found a way to compete and get the most out of his abilities and found a way to win a lot of games.
Scott played quarterback at UNLV. What was it like raising a quarterback as a son, you know, coaching quarterbacks in the NFL? I mean, what was the input and the coaching dynamic like between you and Scott?
Well, I think you get when you play the position like Scott did, I think you get a great perspective on, you know, how challenging the position actually is. And, you know, I got to be there for spring ball a couple times and watch Scott, and you know, you get excited watching him and you watch guys grow and get better and then learn, and you know, obviously Scott played for John Robinson and some of my guys I worked with, John Jackson, Bruce Snyder. And if a guy wants to coach, you can't get better training than be around people like that. And you know, I learned from some great coaches, and Scott had the opportunity to be around some of the same coaches and others, and that, you know, kind of propels you into a coaching career.
John and Coach Jim, both obviously sons of Jack, and so they were raised by a coach that was a father to them. What was it like being raised, you know, under a quarterback guru and a great coaching mind like your dad's got?
Well, you know, it's funny. Like, I'm sure Coach, both the Harbaughs will say the same thing. Like, when you're in it, you don't know any different, you know. So it's just kind of that's your dad, you know, and you don't really think about it too much. But looking back at it, I mean, it was, you know, it was great. I mean, in the summers, being able to go out and get my friends over, or we'd go to the high school, and my dad would come, we'd throw, and, you know, just have him work on stuff with us, you know, and just talk to us. I mean, just the, you know, the experience and the help that we had there, you know, you don't obviously get that. But being around the game was the best part of it. I mean, just being around some of the players over the course of my life, being able to see Michael Irvin, you know, celebrating in the locker room when I was 9 years old after they win the Super Bowl is something that, you know, you're always going to remember. So just all the relationships, because ultimately, you know, football is a relationship business, and all the relationships that we've made over the years based on whether it was my dad coaching or me playing, I mean, that's what you get out of the game. That's the best part of football, in my opinion.
Norv, you've been able to achieve at a high level at the college and pro level. What are the biggest similarities between those elite teams? You know, USC in the late 70s and then the Cowboys teams. I mean, what were the common strands that those two teams shared?
Well, you never you can't say enough about the talent. You know, obviously both those situations are very, very talented people. But I think I had people who, no matter what the talent level, they wanted more, and they wanted to achieve. And whether it's Troy Aikman or Emmitt Smith or Michael Irvin or, you know, Russell Maryland, they're guys that wanted to get the most out of the ability they had. And it's contagious. And when you get a large group of guys that have that feeling, then you go put together great teams. And that, you know, you just can't – that's, you know, it goes beyond coaching. I think you instill that in them, and I always talk about John Robinson being one of the great coaches of instilling that and pushing guys further and to get the most out of themselves. But the players ultimately have to do it, and that's the great feeling you have about being around a group of guys like that.
And you guys have done a lot with relationships and pretty good coaching jobs, obviously, in Minnesota. I know, Scott, you've talked a lot about Stephon Diggs and Adam Thielen and the work that you've done there. How much did you enjoy that part of your career, and then how much has it helped you moving forward?
As far as what, just being with different players?
Yeah, and relationships and success there.
Yeah, I mean, you love that. I mean, you love to see a guy like, I mean, and, you know, and I wasn't coaching receivers at Diggs and Thielen, but we brought him in, and, you know, obviously, you know, with the quarterbacks throwing the ball to him, and you saw him. I mean, we watch old teaching tapes that we have, and it's week four of the preseason, and it's Diggs and Thielen out there, and now, you know, you look at them, and they're, you know, I'm reading articles this week about they're the top tandem of receivers in the NFL, and just to, you know, to see guys grow and see guys that you, you know, spent time with have success is, it's obviously very fulfilling. I mean, we're just talking about, you know, a guy like Teddy Bridgewater. I mean, you know, drafting him and working with him is someone that you're, you know, that's someone that you really, you know, you root for. And now, you know, he's with the Jets, and, you know, it seems like he's having a little success, and, you know, it's something that's exciting. You know, you like to see that because, you know, you care about these guys. You spend so much time with them. You want them to do well.
Norv, if you had to say the most common characteristic or what is shared between the elite quarterbacks that you've coached in your career, I mean, what are the things that you see most often about the really great players at the quarterback position? You know, with Troy, Phillip, maybe what Cam has, some of the other guys.
Well, there's so many different characteristics that are critical. Obviously, the physical part of it goes without saying, because if you have to have a certain skill level to be able to compete and be able to play. But I think probably the number one thing you need to play quarterback at the NFL level is mental toughness, because it's not going to be easy all the time. You're going to have to pick yourself up off the ground and continue to compete. you know, there's a lot of different things you have to overcome at the position. And I always tell people, you know, you go and you put that 2-minute drive together and go win a game, then everyone forgets everything that happened before. And that's the way you've got to play. You know, you got to put the last play behind you and you got to move on to the next play, to the next series, to the next drive. And then, you know, put yourself in a position to win. You know, so that part of it, the mental toughness, and you know, it's a leadership position. You got to be the guy, and there's a lot of different ways of leadership. There's a lot of different ways of being the guy, but I think the number one thing is you have to understand that everyone's looking towards you and everyone's counting on you.
Scott, I'm going to ask you to get in the weeds a little bit here, but run pass option and the RPO term has been a real buzzword in the last year or two. I mean, it's existed longer than that, but what do you see from as an evolution at the quarterback position and the different run pass options that are available to quarterbacks, and how do you see, I guess, offensive game planning evolving, you know, based around the RPO buzzword that everybody keeps saying?
Yeah, I mean, there's no question it's been around a lot longer than, you know, people think. I mean, you know, colleges have been doing it for a long time, you know, obviously. Even in the NFL, though, I mean, there's always been, you know, run plays where you put passing tags on it. Then it got a little bit more exotic where you're kind of reading people on the second level. It's not just a number count. But the way that I look at it personally is just an extension of the run game, you know. And you want to run the ball. And if you get, you know, it's all, you know, I shouldn't say all. It's mostly, you know, a numbers deal. And if you can't have a look to run it, then there's passing options off of the same play, you know. And to me, like, you view it as runs. And if the ball gets thrown, you know, then that's just you protecting your running game. And it's good. I mean, the quarterback has to make decisions. You got to trust your quarterback in order to do it. But there's also, it's good as a, if you're calling plays or you're installing offense, that the quarterback can make you right. You give them options instead of just, you know, hey, saying we're plugging it, you know, we're running it in there, and if they got an extra guy, you got to make a miss. You know, now you kind of make the defense be honest and play you honestly. So I think there's always going to be stuff like that. You know, there's always going to be guys that are going to, you know, tinker with offensive football and try to see, you know, what they can do to try to, you know, score points and gain yards. And I think all that stuff is good. I think it's all worth, you know, worth looking at. Some plays are better than others, but, you know, just seeing people get creative, you know, with football is good. I think it's great.
Anything to add to that, Norv? You know, from a personnel standpoint, each offense will have a different set of guys or whatever, but I mean, just trying to put your guys in the best position possible, kind of echoing what Scott said.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I go back to everyone, you know, marveled at Peyton Manning be able to get them in the right play, and, you know, all his antics before the ball was snapped, and, you know, everyone had a way they had to defend him. And it's just an extension of that. As Scott said, it's now you're calling the run, and instead of having to check out and hope you're right or have them not check back to a pass defense, you've built in a pass pattern off the run, and so you're giving the quarterback the best of both, and you're a little limited in terms of the routes because the ball's going to come out quick, but you know, the defense has to handle those situations, and I think defenses are finding, you know, you get up there and overplay the run and you take too many chances, and you got a chance of getting burnt. You know, Cam's been as good at it as anybody. Cam Newton, he started doing these things in 2011. People don't appreciate it, but he's been pretty amazing at it, and we're going to try to build on those things.
Lastly, a little bit lighter. Coach Jim has his dad living right next door to him. You know, so the kids will, you know, the grandkids are commonly, you know, going over there, running down the hill to their grandparents' house. How much do you enjoy having your grandchildren here with you and being in the area and being able to see them pretty often?
Well, it's incredible. You know, that's one of the bonuses of coaching with Scott. And, you know, I enjoy it, obviously. And it's, you know, great for my wife, Nancy. You know, it gives her some entertainment. And she just, you know, we've really enjoyed watching them grow up. We're, you know, in Minnesota when they're both born, and you know, it's fun being around them as much as we can.
Appreciate you guys both. Thank you, Scott. Thank you, Norv.
Thank you. Enjoyed it.
Now on Attack Each Day, the Harbaugh's podcast, we have to give some love to the show's longest running sponsor. It is TrueCar. And if you're looking to buy a car, you're probably familiar with terms like MSRP. It stands for Manufacturer Suggested Retail Price. And typically they slash that price down to a lower price, which is supposed to be a good price, but then you're not sure if it's the best price. And that's where TrueCar comes in. So all you're really looking for is a price that actually means something, and introducing True Price from TrueCar. Now you can know exactly what you'll pay for the car you want, including fees and accessories, before you even get to the dealership. And TrueCar dealers will show you the true price on cars like the exact one you want, all from the comfort of your own home. So they make it as easy as can be. And how do you know the true price is a great price? That's because TrueCar shows you what other people paid for the same car that you want. And your certified TrueCar dealer knows this. They set their price accordingly, and that true price is competitive so that they can win your business. So when you're ready to buy a new or used car, visit TrueCar to enjoy a more confident car buying experience. Some features not available in all states.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Since you're listening to this show, I'd like to encourage you to take a listen to the show of one of our past guests. The Adam Carolla Show is available every weekday on Podcast One, and the Ace Man still holds the title of the number one daily downloaded podcast in the world as he complains about whatever is on his mind with his celebrity pals Drew Pinksy, Doug Benson, and many, many more. So check out the Adam Carolla Show at Podcast One and Apple Podcasts. Also, remember to rate and review.
This is Jack Talk.
I want to listen. I want to be better. I want to be the best I can be.
Welcome to our team. The team.
Jack Talk.
As you get older, you get to be 78 years old. Here's what I find. Hair grows in places that it hadn't been before.
Welcome to hashtag Jack Talk.
Attack Each Day, the Harbaugh's podcast. Time now for Jack Talk. And we've got to get to two things. We've got to get to the ladder story. And we've got to get to a little bit of the Russian czars, kind of a small world story here about your experience in the Michigan healthcare system and a family member affiliated with the Russian czars. So, Jack, please explain.
One of the great moments in my coaching career was back in 92 or 93, we played the Russian czars, and they were labeled as the... The football game was labeled as the International Football Classic. They came over from Russia. We played them, and we've told the story, and it's a fantastic story. The coach was arrested. Eldon Cunningham was arrested the day before the game, and we had to take one of ours. They had no assistant coaches. We had to take one of our assistant coaches and make him coach of the Czars, and it was a rather blowout. The great athletes. I mean, they had 100 meters champions, wrestling champions, Olympic champions. You know, five or six or seven of them on the team were just world-class athletes, but they just didn't have a knowledge of football. So we won handily. And this week I had a little bout with the shingles, and Dr. Tim Johnson over in dermatology had a chance to visit with him and talk with him, and he did a fantastic job. I thought with shingles, you know how painful it is, and some family members have had it, but he did a fantastic job of getting me on the right track. But anyway, I got a phone call last night. He asked how we were doing, and we talked, and he says, "You and I have something in common that you may not be familiar with." I said, "We do." He said, "We do, and I've been meaning to talk to you about this." He said, I think it was a nephew that played football against the Western Kentucky Hilltoppers. And I'm thinking, oh my goodness, was it the OVC, Eastern Kentucky, one of those games? Or maybe it was the Gateway Conference, Western Illinois, or one of those teams? Or, you know, maybe it was a national championship game at McNeese State. I said, well, who did your nephew play for? The last name or team, the Russian Czars. I said, you got to be kidding me. And I was talking outside because we were having dinner, and I didn't want to interrupt anybody. I almost dropped in my, the Russian Czars. Well, tell me about it. And he was over in Russia, and they put this team together, and he had played some football here in the in this country. So he went out and played. He was a lineman. I believe he was a defensive lineman. And the week was fantastic. They ate, I think every day they ate at McDonald's because we were responsible for the food, so we didn't feed them very well and put them in probably our worst dormitory. And that's where they stayed for a week. And these high-priced Olympic athletes from Russia weren't very fond of that, so they boycotted the game on Wednesday. So I want to get with Dr. Johnson and talk to him about if he's familiar with those stories, the boycott, and the owner had to come in from Houston to put a little extra into whatever they were getting for playing in the game. And so we have a lot to talk about, but just again shows you the fantastic people here at the University of Michigan that you meet throughout the university and throughout the city of Ann Arbor. And this life, how this life just kind of interacts, and we meet so many interesting people along the way.
Dr. Johnson and his nephew Eric, in the program, it lists a native of Houston. So there are some different facts and tidbits in this program. We'll have to put it up on our Twitter handle at AED Podcast. But you know, there are some fantastic Olympians on this international football club, and you're seeing, you know, silver medalists in the 100 meters for the 1988 Olympics, javelin throwers, 4x100 relay world record setters. I mean, some real crazy, you know, there's a wrestler, a WWF wrestler, all-Europe rugby team. I mean, I'm looking at this thing, fourth in the decathlon. Very, very impressive list of accomplishments. But like you said, they didn't have the football coaching savvy maybe that Western Kentucky did. So, but on to the ladder story, if you would indulge us, please, Jack.
We went over to Holland, Michigan this week to speak at the University of Michigan Alumni Club. Had a fantastic time over there, and a couple of our old friends, Dick and Lynn Cook. Lynn was Bo's secretary here for 20 years, and 7 of the years we were here, and we got to telling the ladder story. We lived over in Anderson off of Packard. And in the back, it was like a 2.5-story back, but it was only like one story. The backyard kind of sloped down, and we had a little patio back there, and a lot of trees, a lot of leaves, and about 2 or 3 times a year, you had to get out and clean out the eaves. And so I would do this, and I didn't have an extension ladder. I just had one layer ladder, and didn't quite reach to the top. So what I did, which all men do in this world, you put the ladder on a picnic bench. I mean, there's very few people out there that wouldn't do that. So I did that, but I still couldn't reach the top. So I had a hose with water that I would squirt the leaves down the spout and out to get them moving, because I didn't want to keep moving the ladder. I mean, you could, the pressure of the hose, you can just picture this, right? Would move them along. So I'm up there on the ladder holding on with my right arm to the ladder on the picnic bench, and I'm squirting the water coming out of the hose, and all at once I hear boo, boo. I could feel the ladder kind of loosening up from the house. And we had a big bay window in the back of the house where the kitchen was, and all at once now the ladder just flies out off the picnic bench straight up in the air, and I'm coming down the side of the house, boom, 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 hitting the side of the house with the ladder. And as I go by the picture window, I see Jackie. She's looking out the window. No. So now I hit the deck, the patio, and I'm holding on to the ladder, and my cheekbone goes into the ladder, and I break my cheekbone. I fracture my cheekbone, and I'm on the ground holding it. There's glass from the window, and I hear Jackie come out of the house. No, stay in the tree. You don't have any shoes on. You're going to cut your feet. Jim was watching me clean the eaves from the tree, and he came out of the tree, and I'm down there now. I got blood coming out my mouth, blood coming out my nose. I'm semi-conscious, still holding on to the ladder. And Jackie, she's right here. She could probably explain. Jackie, come over here and explain what you were thinking as you saw me coming down off that roof.
Not the roof, off the ladder.
I can't stop laughing.
Laughing?
Well, what happened was I was coming down with laundry from upstairs, and when I saw you going down, I saw Jim in the tree, and I thought, oh my gosh, he's going to come out of the tree, jump into the glass, cut his feet. I'm going to have two people to take to the hospital. So I took care of him first. And then I ran out the door to help you, right?
Exactly.
And I took you to the hospital.
Exactly the way it went.
Okay, so that's the rest of the story.
Well, there's more to the story.
So Jack's going to put the finishing touches on this one, as he so oftentimes does.
So I'm on the ground, you know, bleeding profusely. Jim's taken care of, and a gentleman comes over. We'd been in the house about 2 years, and the gentleman came over that was lived in our backyard. Our backyards butted up to one another, and he came over. And now I'm up. I get up, and I'm sitting on a kind of a rock wall that we had there. And I'm sitting there, and I'm trying to get control of the bleeding. And he goes, Jack Harbaugh, I don't think we've ever met. I'm your neighbor. I just wanted to come over and say hello. And I said, well, hello. So now, so we had a chance to meet, which is probably a positive out of that. I want you to know, and I say that for no other reason, that you had a chance, a way to meet your neighbor. So then we go to the hospital, and I have to have surgery. I mean, they had to open up my head and wire. They call wiring it. They wired up my cheekbone, that bone, or maybe it's a orbit, eye orbit, something like that. But they wired that up. And my face, looked like a punching bag. And so I came home, and I'm in bed, and I'm thinking to myself, wow, this is something. And all at once, I hear some music. It was really a low-playing music, like, and I'm thinking, oh, my God. They wired that cheekbone, and I'm on a frequency here. And the rest of my life, I'm going to go through life with an antenna in my face. And I hope it's something I want to hear, you know, maybe a baseball game or some nice music. I don't want to get anything that I'm not interested in. So I'm laying there thinking, wow, this is some way to go. And I'm not joking. I mean, this is serious stuff. And so then all at once I realized that there was a radio there, and it was kind of turned down real low. And once it turned the radio off, the noise stopped. So I wasn't going to be handicapped for life with an antenna in my face listening to music.
You weren't transmitting nor receiving a signal, and you were okay. It reminds me a little bit of the Ralph story where your senses are all, you're right?
It's about the same thing, trying to find a way to turn that helmet around with that little hole that you're looking out of.
Exactly. Well, I'm just so thankful that, you know, you've given the parenting credit mostly to Jackie for the great job raising John and Jim and Joni, and I think that's just another example of her fine job of parenting. She already knew that you were a lost cause in that instance, and so just wanted to make sure a bad situation didn't get worse.
And I've been criticized for the fact that I put the ladder on the picnic bench. And Jackie just mentioned how true that is, that I've been criticized for it. But I just want to, all those that have cleaned out their eaves with a ladder on the picnic bench and a hose to kind of, the water kind of dripped down the ladder onto the picnic bench that hastened the slide of the ladder. How many have experienced that? To kind of text us or email us and let us know their story.
I'm going to have to just mention the dumbest thing that I've ever done, you know, in terms of cleaning or, you know, I thought, you know, I was working at a construction site and, you know, I was responsible for cleaning the parking garage, you know, and so, like you said, I sweep it up. I do a pretty good job of that, but I've got a nice resource at my disposal being a pressure washer. So I pressure wash it, I get all the dirt down, you know, feel like I'd done a great job and wrapped it up. And then I figured, you know, my hands are a little bit dirty. If I could just pressure wash the dirt off of my hands, and if I could move the pressure washer far enough away from my hands, then I could just surely wash my hands off. So I pull the pressure washer as far away from my hand as possible and then spray it for about a quarter of a second before it peels off about four layers of skin from my palm. So
You know what? I know you're piling on here, and it'd be best to drop this right now. But I got to tell you, when we went to Bowling Green State University, we worked commodity jobs. You were on a full scholarship, but you had to work a job. And you work 14 hours during the off season, and you work 7 hours during the season. And you could always tell what kind of football player you were by the job you got. You know, star quarterback, he kept a scrapbook over at the coach's office where he could study film and do that. Some other guys, you know, watched to see that the watering sprinkling system went on the football field. So they didn't do anything. They didn't know anything about watering football fields, but that was make sure it's on. So they got their 14 hours. The guys that weren't real good got tough jobs. And so I had one of the tougher jobs. We'd go into the classrooms and we would buff floors. Mm-hmm. And if you ever buffed the floor,
no.
Oh, let me just say what they would do. We'd go over there the first day and the guys that were working over there thought this is funny for them, you know. Harbaugh, grab that buffer and plug it in, and the wheels going real fast, and they wouldn't tell you how to do it. And so what would happen? You'd plug it in and you'd turn it on, and you didn't know how it would do it. I mean, it would just take you, boom, throw you into the wall, and you'd come over there, and then you boom, you'd go over to the other wall. You're just going back, and there's four guys over there going laughing like, and then if you weren't careful, if you tipped it, it'd go forward. But it was all in, if you tipped it slightly forward, you moved ahead. If you tipped it back, it went back. If you tipped it to the right, you picture that?
Mm-hmm.
And eventually you learned it. But these guys got the biggest kick of watching these football players being bounced off of a wall. Uh-huh. So that was my introduction. So, again, anyone out there with a buffer story, I would really be interested in that as well.
And I know that we've got some blue-collar listeners. Just rest assured that you are doing fantastic work, and not everybody can do it. Yeah, we, you know, some of us aren't great cooks, some of us aren't great manual laborers, some of us aren't great coaches. But let it be known that Coach Jack and myself are deficient and devoid of some of those very important manual labor skills. So I think that'll do it for us this week. We certainly appreciate the show's sponsors. We thank Podcast One and Ira Weintraub and Jackie Harbaugh's interjection in the Jack story and with us while recording. So always fun to have her around. We appreciate all the interactions with the program via hashtag Jack Talk or at AED Podcast or at JTE Rogan. We'll look forward to hearing more from Coach Harbaugh when he gets back from Peru. But until then, keep attacking each day with an enthusiasm unknown to mankind.
Thank you for listening to Attack Each Day, the Harbaugh's podcast, here on Podcast One. Don't forget to subscribe at podcastone.com, the Podcast One app, or Apple Podcasts.